Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I
have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macro aggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macro Aggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rumble, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you are listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate it. We could not do the show without you, without the support of our sponsors that help make this happen. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the best place to do that. You can find information about the books and the podcasts and Activist Post and Natural Blaze and all that good stuff. If you haven't rated the show yet, will you take just 3 seconds and scroll down and do it for the love of God. We're fighting this algorithm battle to the best of our abilities. And I personally don't care how you rate the show, but it matters to the algorithm. So let's play this game to win. So thank you in advance to everybody. Also to our sponsors, they're fantastic. We've got My Patriot Supply is back. They'll set you up with storable food that'll last you for a quarter of a century. Hopefully you never need it. It's one of these things. It's like an insurance policy. You're better off being a year early than a day late. And you don't want to have what we had during COVID where you've got to fight some asshole in the frozen food section for the last bag of vegetables or something. You know what I mean? So let's just be proactive. Things will get weird. To the extent that we can minimize that, it pays to have storable food. They built a landing page that's specific for us. You can go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com and just check it all out there. And they're always running sales there too. It's not just storable food as well. They have camping gear, survival gear. There's a lot going on over there. Just go to the website. They built it for us. It's easy to navigate. You can knock this whole thing out in about 10 minutes and get yourself set up. Or maybe there's somebody in your life who you want to make sure they are taken care of. You just buy it for them, have it drop shipped to them, and it'll get there in a couple days. So you grab a couple buckets, put it in your basement, and you're done. You're good. Don't freak them out, though. Just tell them that you're getting it for, you know, tornadoes or earthquakes or whatever. But don't say it's for the economic collapse that's coming. It's coming. I hope it's not, but it's probably coming. So anyway, go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com to check that out and get yourself all sorted out. Also, one of our newest sponsors, Van Man, they're making outstanding lotions. I've got the vanilla body butter here right in front of me in a nice glass jar. I've got the tallow and honey balm. They even have tallow and coconut soap in a very cool package. They've got tooth powder, not toothpaste, tooth powder. Game changer. They sent me some. I'm never going back to toothpaste again. If you haven't tried tooth powder, you need to check it out. The best place to do it, go to vanman.shop and just take a look. See what you think. If you find something you like, the discount code is macro. Their products are all natural. Their vanilla body butter is just filled with grass-fed beef tallow, shea butter, olive oil, honey, and vanilla oil. Not a bunch of chemicals, none of that stuff. They've all even got a new deodorant too. So they've got a new deodorant without aluminum. I have not tried that out yet. But I've tried all their other products out and they're fantastic. So it stands to reason that this will be great too. Just go to vanman.shop, take a look around, see what you think. Follow them on X as well. They despise the government, which is part of the reason why we like them so much. So if you find something that you like over there, the discount code on your way out the door is macro. Well, now that the business is out of the way, it is my great pleasure to welcome to the show. If you're on X and you're not following him, you should. If you've got a subscription to Iconic, you'll probably see him over there. Ladies and gentlemen, Seven Seas. Good to see you, man. How are you?
I am excellent, Charlie. Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Well, it was nice to meet you in Nashville at Third Eye Carnival. That was a blast for me. Do you ever get out to those live events much?
No, actually, that was kind of my first one as far as like my foray into the research field and things like that. I think the last thing that I went to was maybe a concert last year. And that's like once in a blue moon kind of thing. I don't know. I'm a real homebody kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a lot to get me out of the house, but I always feel better once I go, I mean, look at all these people. These people are great. And they're interested in getting to know one another. It's a nice place to build a network of like-minded people, at least, you know, for those of us that sometimes feel like maybe we're crazy, like we're the only ones that are seeing this, and you get out there and you go, oh, okay, everyone, I get it. They see it too. So it's great to, you know, Steve did a wonderful job putting that all together. He couldn't do much about the weather, but though it was raining, it was still fun. I felt like part of the day we had a little baseball rain delay. We got a little podcasting in. We had some stand-up comedy later in the night. One of those good old-fashioned Tennessee rainstorms that are amazing. I was glad to be there. It was nice to meet you. I've been following your work for a while now and saw that you were working with the folks over at Iconic. What's going on with you and Iconic? You know, I love those guys. Rich Willett is one of my absolute favorite people in the world.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I love everyone at Iconic. I think Rich, don't tell David this, but Rich might be my favorite person at Iconic.
We see the world the same way. Sometimes I just look at him and I just start laughing. I just go, what are we doing? He's like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So I did a 10 episode sort of like a season, I guess you would call it, or limited series on there, called This Week on the Web, where we explored a bunch of different things that have influenced, the United States and world politics over the last 100 years or so. We even went for a little bit of it. I went over the French Revolution and how we've seen like some similarities. I don't know if you remember Trump tweeting out the Napoleon thing, but my episode came out and then like 3 days later, he's like retweeting Napoleon. And I was like, see? the medical industry, technocracy, obviously was a big part of that as well. And then like the Kabbalistic, esoteric sort of things, I tagged Rich in to help me with that, and then capped it all off with a show with Vagabond.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, man. This is well, technocracy is what I want to talk to you about mostly today, because I feel like there are people that are not really understanding how important this is as a, the creeping technocracy and the digital panopticon that's being built around us. You know, the more I think about it, the more terrified I get, and I try to not get myself in a in a mindset of being fearful, because I don't think it does me much good. I'd rather just understand it all. But I worry about the digital side, because we've welcomed it into our homes. We've normalized it throughout our lives. I mean, we're having a conversation using technology. And so you know, it's hard to talk to people about how dangerous it is when it enhances our lives in so many ways. It's just that there's this line at which you cross over, and this technology that you've used to add to your life can be weaponized against you. So, like, for somebody, how should we view this? I mean, I don't want to be doom and gloom about it, because because obviously there are solutions to it, and of course we'll talk about that, but I'd be doing everybody a disservice if I didn't say how important I felt like this impending technical takeover is. How do you view this technocracy?
Well, if I'm being completely honest, I will just come out right out of the gate and short and sweet. I think it's going to be the end of sort of human autonomy. I think that their eventual end goal is to imbue the human body with technological devices that measure things like brain waves. And, you know, Elon's even talked specifically about the Neuralink being wired directly into the cortex that controls motor functions and things like that, which I think is really scary.
Yeah.
I do think that... there are ways to sort of boycott the system as much as possible. Obviously, everyone's going to have their own sliding scale of, you know, what they're comfortable with accepting and how far they're willing to go as far as sacrificing those luxuries and conveniences that technology provides us. Where, you know, when the brain chip comes out, I just ask everyone, don't get anything that they want to put in or on your body. No. That's the number one most important step. But it's plain as day to see, like, AI is slowly starting to replace human consciousness. You know, a lot of the times I get sort of flack for saying, you know, you just sound like the guy who was warning about the horse and carriage business going out when the automobile came out. And I'm like, well, that's exactly what it is. But, you know, we're not replacing a mode of transportation. We're replacing our brains with these things, and just sort of seeing where everything is lining up. You know, you have big tech buying up nuclear facilities. Elon Musk is launching probably 10 satellites a day, or, you know, 100 a week, or whatever that looks like. And he's in bed with, like, the intelligence agencies, National Reconnaissance Office, CIA, world governments. And then, you know, we have the drones, Peter Thiel's Palantir, humanoid robots and stuff. So all the pieces are slowly starting to come together. And the only way that I think that we'll be able to sort of resist this stuff is by not feed the beast, you know, stay away from the digital, you know, social media is kind of the, it's like a double-edged sword, because it's the only way that I know, outside of just going out and handing out flyers to people physically, to get this information out.
Right.
But at the same time, it's doing exactly what they want it to do, and that's capture everyone's information and feed us certain narratives and stuff like that.
Yeah, it certainly does feel like a trap, and a necessary evil in some regards. Like, I feel the same way about social media. I would love to not be on it. But I've made a calculation that to the extent that I can, I will use it for my benefits. I will use it to promote the show. I will use it to try to educate people about something that I see that I think is important. But I always feel a bit gross as well doing it, because I know that this is part of the plan, and that all this data is being harvested, and that it's building a digital voodoo doll of me. It knows exactly where to put the pin in order to make me angry or whatever, or sad, or, you know. So I have to offset all my conspiracy stuff on X with following cat channels. I've got one called Cats with Jobs that I like. I've got another one where it's otters, like very cute otters. So it's like, I'll be scrolling through and it'll be like, oh my God, here's I mean, the precursor to World War III, and then the next one will be like a family of otters, you know, and I'm okay, much better. So I'm trying to like manage it myself, but not doing a very good job. I still find myself getting sometimes enraged by the things that I see. And then I have to, oh God, you know, you see a video. My, I don't know about your X feed, but my X feed desperately wants me to hate people. It just shows me the hateable things. I mean, things that you would rightly hate the person for doing, but it's like, you know, people getting jumped, you know, some nerdy kid getting beat up by five black kids. It's always race related too, by the way. Mm-hmm. They definitely want me to feel a certain way about other races, which is horrible, of course, but also kind of fascinating too. I've also taken an approach to it, like, well, let's see how it wants me to feel. I think if you're aware that it can do that to you, you're maybe less susceptible to it, but I don't know. I mean, less susceptible still doesn't mean that you're immune to it. But I find myself from time to time just recognizing that this is feeding me a version of the world that they want me to believe. And then I go to the Bill Hicks quote, like, open your window and stick your head out and it's crickets. You know, it's like, it's not happening to me. So maybe it's really not happening out there. And so, I mean, well, you know what? Let's start with Palantir, since it was one of the things that you mentioned. And this is a company that, boy, I don't like what they're doing clearly at all. But even if I thought that all they did was sell house paint, I would be unnerved by Peter Thiel and Alex Karp.
Yeah,
because the things that they, the way they view the world, how they talk about things, and Karp's relationship to InQtel and Thiel's relationship to Facebook and Pentagon and all of this stuff makes me feel very uncomfortable. Even if they were running a non-dangerous company, but as it turns out, I think Palantir is in the running for the most dangerous company in the world. What's your take on Palantir through all the research that you've been doing on them?
Yeah. So I think that somewhere along the way, the government understood that they couldn't do all of the things with, different clauses and red tape and stuff in the Constitution. So they use these private companies to sort of sidestep those things. We've seen the very same thing with like when Blackwater was in Iraq and stuff. Right. And I think that very early on they realized that they could utilize these big tech companies, and you know, Palantir was sort of responsible for the software that the NSA was using for like their mass surveillance program, for example. But it's this unfettered way to just aggregate all of this data and essentially spy on people. They are, you know, mass manufacturing military drones. They have massive government contracts. I've seen a video of Alex Karp. He was talking to a board of directors and he was saying, you know, sometimes we just have to kill people. And he was like smiling about it. I think he's crazy. It is what it is. I think he's paranoid a little bit, but Peter Thiel especially, just with how ingrained he is with all of these different companies and stuff that he's either provided seed funding to help influence, or the fact that he's like actively recruiting people out of Stanford to run these shell companies. He has the Thiel Fellowship where he says, hey, you know, if you drop out of college, I'll fund whatever. And, right. You know, ended up snagging people like Vitalik Buterin, who controls Ethereum. So it's like, these aren't even...
Oh, he got him? I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was 2014, maybe. And Ethereum ended up exploding. It's worth, you know, billions and billions of dollars, and is a major chunk of the crypto market. And then, obviously, Peter Thiel has a long financial history with Elon Musk through PayPal. Them and David Sacks are out of like South Africa. And then you have, you know, David Sacks, Howard Lutnick, and all these people, Mark Andreessen. And I think they subscribe to the belief, it's called Tescreel. So it's an acronym, but it's essentially associated with all of these big tech people, and they put on a front that they, I don't know if they actually believe this, because I don't know how you could in their position, but they think that they are doing all of these things for the benefit of humanity, and that what they're sort of pushing on people, the mass surveillance, the brain chips, and things like this are going to inevitably prolong human existence and have us be more efficient and a better species and all these different things. And I just think it's all insane. And that's completely disregarding the fact that, I mean, Thiel's basically running the surveillance for like NSA, CIA, FBI. You know, they're injecting Palantir into the government right now, very heavily influenced with Elon Musk's XAI and everything coming from Twitter. And it's insane.
I saw that they were, that Palantir's software was the targeting system used for deciding which building in Gaza was filled with terrorists and which building was filled with innocents. Apparently, none of them are filled with innocents, according to their software. Hospitals? Well, there's probably terrorists in the basement. Apartment complexes? Well, we heard a rumor that maybe there's a guy on the fourth floor that might have some Hamas leanings or something. Well, time to take out the entire building. So are they, you mentioned them making drones themselves. I saw the company that Palmer Luckey's doing making these, I mean, if I'm being honest, fantastic looking, you know, obviously they're weapons, so you can't love them too much, but these amazing mini rockets that were just, that could be launched from anywhere and had a very long, I mean, they're almost like, I don't know, it was like a cross between a rocket, like an ICBM and a drone. I don't know how else to describe it. They were small enough that you could put one in the trunk of a car, it looked like, and fold it up and launch it. Where's this going? What's the direction this is going? Because I get it. There's always been military. We can go back throughout time, and there's always been a technological race, and whoever's got the better catapult, you know, maybe they break down the walls of the castle and get in there. So I understand the progression of this, but it feels like we're almost at a point, like we have crossed a line in which you cannot put the genie back in this bottle. The technology that's coming out is so overwhelmingly dangerous to humanity that I think it only ends one way. What's your take on all this stuff?
Yeah, I think slowly we are reaching the sort of the tipping point here where, you know, Elon's already said, he's on record as saying that AI's already consumed all of human knowledge and information, and now it's having to rely on creating synthetic data. You know, everyone that I see that's always like looking things up, they're using AI, and it seems like they very rarely vet outside of that, and they just sort of take it at face value. You have Elon, who has said that, you know, by 2040 or in the next 10 years or so, that AI is going to be teaching people's children. You have the autonomous robots, as well, and it's not just, you know, Optimus robots, it's every country and every big tech company. Asus, the company that makes laptops and stuff, right? They're building humanoid robots, so it's all of them. You have big tech is buying up nuclear facilities, and that includes, you know, Microsoft, Google, Facebook, Amazon as well. You have the quantum computing and quantum computers, I believe, Microsoft's Majorana, they even claim, now this, I think this is a little ridiculous, but they claim that they were able to invent a new type of matter. And it's a little crazy because the power of those computers and stuff are essentially able to break like any sort of encryption or privacy that people have. So even if you think like something is secure, they're able to sort of get through it anyway, even if it's through brute force. We have satellites going up all the time, encoding the world in like this electromagnetic frequency. and beaming stuff down. I believe Elon just this week said that they're enabling a feature for all Android and iPhones in the world to be able to use the direct-to-cell connection with his satellites, so you can make a phone call or receive a text message from anywhere, and he's going to act as sort of a roaming partner. You have the, Neuralink is obviously one of the biggest, like, BCIs that's out there. But there's also Onward, Synchron. Peter Thiel has his own called BlackRock Neurotech, not related to BlackRock, even though the name says it. But I'm sure
that sets my mind at ease.
Yeah, I'm sure he's getting money from Larry Fink somewhere along the way. But yeah, they're basically setting all these devices up through the FDA Breakthrough Device Program, which allows them to sort of expedite a lot of these clinical trials and remove a lot of the red tape and stuff, because they're positing all the benefits, like being able to, you know, restore vision for the blind, or being able to help people with like ALS or some sort of paralysis. And, you know, just like we've seen with X, how Elon marketed it as like the free speech platform. And then now I think that's, you couldn't be further from the truth. It's sort of this like false promise, just a Trojan horse in, you know, what I think is mass surveillance and ultimately control. And people just seem to be okay with it. And I don't know what's going on. Like, I try to tell these things to people and they call me black-pilled or a conspiracy theorist and stuff like that. So the cognitive dissonance, I think, is really kind of pushing us over the cliff. We have the Kristi Noem Real ID thing that's coming out now. Larry Fink wanting to tokenize everything. Right now he's just saying stocks and bonds, but I guarantee you, you know, if we continue down the same path 15 years from now, every grape in the grocery store is going to have its own token ID, and you're going to have to, you know, pay for it that way. And I don't know. It's sort of seeing like the inspiration from the original technocracy movement with Elon Musk's grandfather and stuff, and how they were wanting to create like an energy-based price system that sort of falls in line with like carbon taxes, carbon credits and stuff. And I don't know. It's that's kind of why I, you know, started doing this. Was I started doing all this research and I was like, well, wait a minute, something is happening here and things are getting redlined and I need to start telling people. And that's what got me into all this.
It's easy to be dismissive of it because for the normies out there, they go, well, if that were happening, surely I would see it, right? And well, maybe not. I mean, it's this technocracy is creeping up. You're using a lot of the products. We've invited them into our homes and made them a part of our lives. But I think a lot of people believe that this is something new. Maybe the technology is new, but the concept is not new. You mentioned the original technocracy movement. I mean, this is like 1932. This is the same time Brave New World is coming out. We've got all this Huxley writing about it. We've got Julian Huxley, his brother, putting together the British Eugenics Society and UNESCO and partners with the World Wildlife Fund and all that crazy stuff. And so the idea of being ruled by a technocratic elite is not new. It's been around for almost 100 years, if not longer. But never has there been the opportunity for them to do this. I think that you have that quote from Zbigniew Brzezinski of a million years ago, where he talks about how it used to be harder to kill a million people than it was to control a million people, and now it's infinitely easier to just kill a million people. So you start to go, well, okay, these guys have always fantasized about it, but the technology, luckily, was out of their reach. Unfortunately, now, not only is it within their reach, but they own the companies that are building it. And if they don't outright own the companies that are building it, then like Peter Thiel, they own Founders Fund, which is seed financing all of these other companies. So it's like maybe his companies are the leader in AI, maybe not. But he's spread out money on 100 different bets. I mean, this is like putting chips on all the numbers at the roulette table. You're bound to win,
Yeah.
You're bound to win at some point. Now, depending on how much your stake is, you know, you might be sort of churning through a little of this, depending on how much money you deploy. But I'm not sure Peter Thiel is worried about money at this point. He's got all of it he could ever possibly need. And if he ever needed more, you just go to Daddy Trump and he just greenlit $500 billion for these lunatics. So what's the role of Trump moving forward in this technocracy? Because I get very bad feelings when I see Larry Ellison and Sam Altman with him.
Yeah, I think it's very similar to COVID, where you know, in the 2016 election, Hillary Clinton, I am under the firm belief that she was never going to win, because they needed a populist, anti-establishment character to come in and basically have COVID happen and start releasing these mRNA vaccines and convince everybody that they had a guy on the inside that was truly fighting for them. And then we had things like Operation Warp Speed and, you know, the big basically taking the Department of Defense and merging it with Big Pharma through that. Eliminating like liabilities for the pharmaceutical companies and stuff. And then I think that Joe Biden ended up winning in 2020 so that he could have that extra comeback story. And, you know, Joe Biden was intentionally destroying the country and being the worst president that he possibly could, you know, sitting up there incoherent, soiling himself probably while he was giving speeches and stuff, so that people would clamor to have Trump back. And with his close proximity with Israel historically, you know, with the Rothschilds back in the 90s, even people like he was associating with Steve Witkoff back in the 80s, who's the envoy for the Middle East, and, you know, all the way up to now. I mean, he picked Susie Wiles as his chief of staff. That should have been everyone's first red flag that this wasn't going to be what they thought it was again, because she's wrapped up with Big Pharma and stuff. Peter Thiel was, you know, backing him in 2016 and the whole Palantir Cambridge Analytica thing. He's right back. He may not have given any money directly, but he was funding all the people that were supporting Trump and all these companies, and especially the partnership with Elon when Elon was officially sort of brought in. I think he sort of joined in an informal capacity right around the Butler incident. Mm-hmm. And then obviously with Doge, he was brought in officially. And I think that we're just having that same case where people wanted Donald Trump. They wanted this populist candidate who they believe is fighting for them. And then now that he's in and the election's over, he's just letting them do whatever they want. He's given billions of dollars to Israel. He's you know, setting up Operation Stargate. He's cleaning all the bureaucrats out of government, which seems like a good thing, but then he's just replacing it with AI, which if I had to choose between, you know, shitty bureaucratic politicians and AI, I'm going to choose the shitty bureaucratic politicians, yeah, even though I don't like them. But morality can still take place there, where yeah, with this other thing, you have this, you know, cold, calculating, always ever obedient machine, and there's zero chance that there's ever going to be a whistleblower or a leak or anything like that. So it's sort of this manufactured problem and then an agenda-based solution that they're handing out to everybody. And I think Donald Trump is sort of their gold goat with that. And I mean, you even have people like Steve Bannon saying that he's potentially going to try to run for a third term.
Yeah, that's crazy. We're fun. I mean, I kind of laugh when you mentioned Joe Biden. We all sort of made this calculation that Joe Biden was terrible at his job. But the problem is, I think we have to get honest about maybe we weren't really sure what his job was. Maybe his job was to be terrible, and he was fulfilling it to the best of his abilities. And they basically just said, listen, let's get this guy who has no soul. He's been in politics for 50 years. He doesn't know anything outside of politics. And we'll have him go out there and be a confusing embarrassment to the nation. And then that will then whipsaw everybody into a frenzy and bring back Trump, and we'll make it look like he's that we really hate him. We've almost killed him a couple times, you know. We hate him so much, and he gets it. I do think that the politicians, maybe they're not in on it, but I do think that they legitimately do not like Trump. I think they see him as vile and a threat to their grift going on. But he's, you know, I kind of joked when we were getting close to the elections or selections, however you want to define it, that we might be better off with Kamala Harris. I mean, that for all of her many flaws, she's so incompetent, it would have been fantastic to have her just muddle through the process and not get as much done. The thing about Trump that makes him so dangerous is that he can be efficient. You know, he can get things done. I mean, he certainly is guilty of getting a lot done. Might not be the best, and he's, whatever they're doing, they've got his base believing that he's cleaning up the deep state. You know, he's getting rid of all this inefficiency. He's getting rid of the Department of Education, which needed to go away. He's getting rid of USAID, which was a criminal enterprise. And so you see these things and you go, well, good, I'm glad he's getting rid of this. But I can also simultaneously hold the belief that, well, now he's just making it more efficient. You know, for the computers to run things too. I mean, USAID is gone, and the Department of Education is gone. Well, the Department of Education could be gone, but as Elon said, at some point you'll have robots teaching the kids. So I don't know. I might want the blue hair Marxist at the front of the classroom instead of Terminator. You know, can I go to the bathroom? Zap, you know, like this does not set my mind at ease at all. I mean, Trump appears to be playing a character, right? Is that how we would define him, as playing a role and being a character in this grand game?
Yeah, I always like to reference Animal Farm. You know, when I'm speaking about Trump, where, you know, the pigs in the story were like, you know, we're animals just like you, and then end up ultimately being worse. You know, I again, back to like COVID, right? If Hillary Clinton had tried to shut the country down and give all this money to like big pharma and stuff, there would have been riots in the streets, I feel like, you know, and instead Trump was able to sort of use his trust and the QAnon psyop of like, don't believe your lying eyes, there's, you know, backdoor secrets and we're secretly trying to fight. And I think he's being used to disarm the population by courting that trust from people, and it worked so well the first time with COVID and things that I think they're basically just setting up for a redo. And I like to think that people are paying attention, but I think that Joe Biden did such a good job at being so terrible that people are just willing to take the good with, or the take the bad with whatever good. I haven't seen much good, but.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Trump's uncle, John Trump, deeply involved in the Tesla situation. Back when Nikola Tesla was sequestered to a hotel room and died, and all of his work and articles and everything was taken by a guy named John Trump, Donald Trump's uncle, right?
Yeah.
What are the chances?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, excuse me for not trusting the plan, but what are the chances that the Trump's Tesla, Elon Musk's parents or grandparents, grandfather and technocracy, hell, his whole family, his mother's a dangerous woman as well.
Yeah.
This feels like intergenerational technocracy. Is that what's going on? It's more than just what's happening today. That the seeds were planted a century ago to push us into this, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you have people like, you know, with the original technocrats, they were wrapped up with people like John Dewey and other people from like the New School for Social Research, which was, you know, established by Rockefeller, who spent the last 100 years like taking the medical field and transforming it into the medical industry that we have today. And there was, you know, when I look back at like FDR and Teddy Roosevelt was part of something called the conservative movement, or the conservancy movement, which was a spinoff of the efficiency movement that helped to inspire the technocrats. And then FDR had Guy Tugwell, who was a technocrat, in his office. And then we got Social Security numbers, and that's just, you know, an ID tag for people, and things like that. So it's, I've seen a little bit of the technocratic influence kind of revisiting history through this new lens and being able to see where some of those pieces line up. And I do honestly think that it's been like a 100+ year plan, and that they've slowly kind of calculated and things. And that's been hyper accelerated since big tech and Silicon Valley have sort of sprung up. And I think they have all of these, you know, BlackRock has Aladdin that's able to like do market predictions and stuff. And with the access that we give them on social media, feeding them all of our thoughts and profiles and stuff, I think they're actually able to like game people's perception.
Yeah. You mentioned social security numbers, you know, and it's on that flimsy cardboard, crappy cardboard piece of, you know, that you're not allowed to laminate, which has always cracked me up. But those are going away, right? Because now we've got the real ID.
Yeah.
And this is the next step. It's the, as David Icke would say, the totalitarian tiptoe, you know, right? You can't go to digital prisons all at once, but you could go to, hey, real ID to get on an airplane. You got to have it, man. We don't know who you are. We have to check that. We have to be more efficient. Efficiency program. So, and Christy Gnome, Ice Barbie out there, glamming it up, selling it like crazy to Trump's base. And I get really bad feelings when these people are talking about biometrics and real IDs. I know that every time you go through TSA, take your license, put it in this machine, pull it out, and then they'll tell you, look at the camera. I always remind people, you don't have to do that. There's a sign right below it that says you are allowed to opt out. So always opt out. I know they're probably going to get your stuff at some point anyway, but make them earn it, right? So what are your thoughts on the real ID? This has been slow walked over the last decade. We'd heard about it, then it got pushed back a little bit more, and then give it a little bit more time to maybe for the technology to catch up. I know that Larry Ellison was offering to do something similar in the aftermath of 9/11. I mean, he was ready to do it back then. So are we finally ready for the real ID?
I definitely think all the pieces are in place for them to launch it and actually have it. I had made a video back in January where I talked about Christy Noem sort of posturing all of the things at the border as sort of the excuse for why we, you know, why they'll say that we need to have it. And then, you know, just late last week, she was the one to sort of give that announcement. And I think when you take into account, you know, like the geolocation data coming from cell phones and the satellite surveillance system, you have, you know, Palantir scraping everybody's data in real time all the time. You have Peter Thiel's ClearView that's being installed in airports and things like that to sort of it's like facial recognition software. They've even bragged on their LinkedIn, ClearView did, about being able to use their facial recognition technology to get some lady arrested at the airport. Now, she was trying to use someone else's ID, and why she was doing that is beyond me. But the fact that they were able to detect that it wasn't her and then, you know, arrest her based on that, I think is just speaking to, like, the ability that they have and being able to access, like, your phone cameras and your microphones and stuff. And It seems like we're slowly, it's coming from one direction with social media and then this other direction with satellite, and it's all these things that are pushing on people in different directions so they don't see that it's all coming from the same place and from the same people. And so I think that the real ID is just going to be that one step, and then, you know, eventually it's going to be, well, now the ID is going to be on your phones. There are going to be no physical cards or anything like that. And then that's just going to tie in with like the inevitable CBDC/crypto installation. And that's going to set up the social credit system.
Yeah. Let's talk about CBDCs, because this has been, in my opinion, the hill to die on. I know you could probably put a slash stable coins as well, because this is a trackable, programmable money. I hate to even use the term money with it, but it's so the ramifications of this and the options that they have at their disposal are terrifying. The idea that they could, it's one thing to say, well, it's digital world, baby. We gotta move from these dollars, these stupid dollars in our wallet to something that's more digital. And an argument can be made that we've been doing that with wire transfers, ACHs, credit cards, PayPal. We've been inching closer to a digital dollar anyway, but still the option to have physical paper money and all of that has been part of it. And I don't know that will continue, but then you start to get into stable coins and CBDCs and you go, okay, well, Klaus Schwab says you'll own nothing and be happy. And then I understand that you can take this money and set it to expire if you wanted to. You could set a percentage of it, or maybe all of it, or make it so that somebody can't ever save anything. So it's, you'll own nothing because you can't save for it. You won't own a car because, well, we might not even make cars available. Everything will be self-driving. But even if it wasn't and you wanted to go buy an old 75 Bronco somewhere that isn't all teched out, you won't have any money because your money in your bank account will evaporate before you have a chance to accumulate any of it. The research that you've done on CBDCs, how close are we?
I would say that the establishment of the Bitcoin and digital currency strategic reserve was a massive step towards that. I think we're eventually going to see like the abolish the Fed movement sort of used as the, we're going to adopt this, and then the same sort of thing where it's like, okay, look, we did a good thing, and then ushering this in where, all through history, we started out where people were, bartering commodities, and they decided to come up with the idea of currency so that kings and stuff could amass massive amounts of wealth because, he couldn't store 100,000 potatoes in his kingdom without them rotting. So they came up with like coins and things. And then the Federal Reserve just ended up further fiating that away and creating, this artificial money supply where we're always paying interest on that. And it's all going up to like the Rothschild banking industry. I just see this as sort of an additional step of fiating for that, where, now they can just print money out of thin air. They don't need any sort of, holdings or reserve. You have things like Tether, which is, co-founded by Brock Pierce out of China. Brock Pierce is not a good person.
Was most definitely, if people who know about Digital Entertainment Network in like the early 2000s, Brock Pierce is a pedophile.
Yeah. And
everyone
like
the people that were working in that company, one of them has an outstanding arrest warrant for pedophilia. I think he's disappeared to Europe. And I don't know if he ever got caught, but that was a group that was extremely dangerous. And then I see that guy sniffing around Tether, by the way, the most profitable per employee, the most profitable company in the world, probably in the history of the world, with how much money they have based on how few people it takes to run that company.
Yeah, I'm under the impression, just because like I've dug a little bit into their stuff. I'm nowhere near as experienced as someone like CoffeeZilla into digging, but I've had experience in crypto before to be able to like read ledgers and understand liquidity pools and stuff. And I honestly think that they're just printing this money. And they're not actually backing it with anything. And I think China's allowing them to do that. And we're adopting this. And, that's not even considering like Brock Pierce's ties to Steve Bannon or the fact that he was wrapped up with Jeffrey Epstein. Like, nobody is vetting this. And I think he even ran for office somewhere during the last election and did fairly well, given his history and things like that. But I'm seeing all kinds of people that are, trying to like sweep all of that history of his under the rug and bring him into this fold. And, you know, he's been seen at, you know, various parties that are celebrating Trump and the Trump presidency. And he's aligned with a lot of people that have this proximity to Trump. And even people like Ian Carroll. I mean, Ian Carroll's two podcast co-hosts took a picture with Brock Pierce to celebrate the Trump victory. And when I tried to say, hey, don't you think this is kind of an issue? He said, the Brock Pierce stuff doesn't affect me personally, so I'm not really going to look into it. And I was like, that's insane to me.
I saw Brock Pierce at Anarchapulco 2019, and I was mortified.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is that guy here?
Everyone's yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a free thing. Like, you could buy the ticket and you can show up, right? Like, nobody's, you know, isn't done anything warranting getting kicked out. But, you know, I took one look at that dude and I was like, I know that guy's history. It ain't good. It's dangerous. Yeah. Yeah, man, these are some bad people with what was his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein? How is he, I mean, Jeffrey Epstein was into so many different aspects of control that, you know, from what he was doing at Zorro Ranch and what he was doing with sexual blackmail entrapment operations or running arms or running Ponzi schemes with Stephen Hoffenberg or, you know, whatever he was doing with Les Wexner, Southern Air Transport, buying airplane companies and moving them around, things like that. I mean, it seems like obviously Epstein was up to no good, but I'm curious what was Brock Pierce doing with him? Do we know?
Yeah. So, he had met with him a few times and I can't remember if it was Brock Pierce introduced Bannon to Epstein or the other way around. There was this thing called Mind Shift, I guess, that, they had sort of gotten acquainted with each other. And basically there were a couple meetings that were set up with like this NASA computer engineer. There was an MIT professor, somebody from like I think that had won a Nobel Prize and then Brock Pierce. And there was a series of meetings, that sort of took place between them. Now, what was discussed, I haven't actually like become privy to the specificities, but I believe a lot of it was surrounding the launch of like various cryptocurrency projects.
Mm. Interesting. One of the components of Epstein that really freaks me out, but doesn't get talked about too much, was his relationship with Martin Nowak at Harvard, the evolutionary dynamics. He donated $30 million to Harvard for this, you know, population dynamics, evolutionary game theory, things like that, trying to watch what would happen to population structures when variables were inserted into it, you know, like COVID,
mm-hmm.
right? Something like that. Wink, wink, definitely not talking about COVID, but they were, and financing what, you know, the construction of these computer models, these algorithms that would show what would happen if you moved, you know, if you did something to a certain group of people here, how that would impact everything else. What's your take on Epstein as far as, you know, I mean, it's hard to kind of rank all the things that he was into. They're all bad, of course,
yeah.
but some of them are just, you know, disgusting, but others yeah. of other components I think are dangerous on a humanity level. So what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think that the, you know, obviously like the sex stuff sort of takes away from the other things that he was involved in.
Totally.
And he, a lot of people aren't aware that he's like a very staunch eugenicist. You know, I've seen Richard Willett's work on like the Zorro Ranch and things like that. I think that a lot of the work that he did with that, like you were saying, it was basically like a version of Sims, but with the whole world and introducing like these hypotheticals and seeing what would happen. Right. It's, they actually have something very similar to that, and it's called, I believe it's the fast healthcare interoperability resources, or like the FEAR system.
Oh, good.
Yeah. F-H-I-R, but pronounced fear. And it's basically been woven into, like, most of the world governments, and they're able to do that exact same thing where they can say, well, what happens if we were to, you know, introduce this disease in Massachusetts? And they're able to sort of simulate that. And I think that, that stuff with Epstein was sort of a precursor to that. And now I believe most of the world governments and, like, the health level seven stuff, it was part of COVID, and that they ended up taking a lot of the numbers that they were reporting and things like that, and pulling them from these simulations because they are trying to generate fear. And I think we're kind of seeing the same thing being utilized for the avian flu stuff that they're trying to drum up with people. You know, the measles outbreak that they're claiming is going around. And it's just sort of courting people into the, hey, take the mRNA vaccines and stuff. And I mean, Jeffrey Epstein was working with, like, the Alcor Life Extension Foundation. A lot of people don't know this, but fun fact, he wanted to have his head and his nether regions frozen so that he could eventually have them unfrozen to use later in life. And it's insane. You know, I've heard theories of, like, he's running cloning facilities or, like, breeding facilities and things like that. And I, you know, I see things with, like, IVF and artificial wombs coming out from the FDA and stuff. And I think all of that stuff was maybe being sort of piloted in private through that. And a lot of the people were not speaking out because of the blackmail stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the blackmail keeps everybody in line, you know, keeps all your scientists doing what they're supposed to be doing. You would have these parties, Fun with Physics, at the island, and they were set up by Isabel Maxwell's husband, one of the Maxwell sisters. Might have been
Al Sackler? Or Al Sackle?
Yeah, the guy that got thrown off a cliff in France, wound up at the bottom of a guy. Yeah, married to one of the Maxwell sisters. Never a good thing. Always going to probably put you in a bad spot. But you mentioned eugenics, and that I think is ultimately the underlying theme, maybe the common denominator here. We go back to, we're talking about the Huxleys and Julian Huxley running the British Eugenics Society, going through the 60s and having a real bad publicity. You know, with all the murdering and all, but having to change the name and say, well, we need to rebrand this. We need to rebrand it, get away from the term eugenics, which has so much baggage associated with it, and maybe make it a little bit more a fresh new face, something futuristic. Let's call it, let's call it transhumanism. Mm-hmm. And so he develops this term, pushes it forward. It gets pushed out through all of the, you know, all the groups that are associated with lowering the world's population, all the, you know, all the groups that we talk about here often. And then it gets picked up by the World Economic Forum and gets pushed as the fourth industrial revolution, the blending of man with machine, into something known as transhumanism. And I think the average person hears that and thinks robot arms for people that lose them in car accidents, right? And that's the sales pitch. And it's great if you're the drummer for Def Leppard and you lose your arm and you get yourself a robot arm, right? Great. Yeah. Great for you. But what's really going on is that term transhumanism means something that most people don't know what it means. And it's talking about eugenics, thinning the herd. And it's one thing when you need to physically inject people in the third world with vaccines with sterilants in them to lower the population, and that takes, you know, a couple generations to produce the results that you want, and maybe it's a little slow. But now we're at a point where Zbigniew Brzezinski's right, it is easier to kill a million people. So can we extrapolate out that transhumanism / eugenics is ultimately the number one goal of people like Peter Thiel and Elon Musk and all these technocrats, but it certainly is just below the surface, is it not?
Yeah, I think that technocracy and transhumanism are sort of like twisted sisters of the same agenda, where the ones that, you know, they can't end up like sterilizing or mutating through, you know, mRNA and all these different things that attack people's DNA, they're going to get them on the technocratic side, where, you know, I think that it's going to be proposition that, you know, getting the brain chip is going to be the next step in human evolution, and if not, then it's going to be the ones that just, you know, hate Elon and technocracy, but they're willing to side with big pharma and, you know, prey on their sort of emotions and things. I mean, you know, when COVID was happening, they were like, if you don't get the shot, you're basically like killing your grandparents. I think they're playing on that same thing, and you know, eugenics had its own sort of movement here through like the Rockefellers, and you know, they sided with this lady named Mary Lasker, who ended up running all these studies and things, and working alongside people like Margaret Sanger, who were doing, you know, eugenics programs on black people, and essentially she was doing all these studies very similar to Margaret Sanger and lobbying politicians and saying like, hey, you know, we're having this issue or this epidemic. We need to start treating this with like medical facilities and research and divisions and stuff. And then slowly over time, they built up like the National Institutes of Health. And now we have like the CDC director from DARPA. She came from ARPA-H, which is like DARPA's biotech spinoff thing, but she's talking about using AI to create new vaccines and find new ways to manipulate DNA. So I sort of see them as like two wings of the same bird. And if they're not going to get you one way, they're going to get you the other. And, you know, once everyone's either chipped up or not able to have children, you're going to have to like by your ability to have kids through artificial wombs or IVF. And I think that's why Elon's so closely associated with the IVF stuff. So I think that both of them are sort of steering us in a direction, like you said, that we're not going to be able to come back from.
Yeah. It's buying yourself children through an artificial womb. I feel Paul Ehrlich is getting a hard on just hearing that, you know, I mean, his idea of, well, we'll just put sterilants in the water and then we'll have a lottery system. And then, you know, if you want to have kids, we'll just, you know, maybe we'll give you like something that'll reverse it. And you're like,
yeah,
what do you like? This is crazy. That should be something that you maybe say to your buddy after you've had too much to drink. It certainly shouldn't be in a book. The population bomb, which was written in 1977, it's not even a new topic. I mean, these guys were fantasizing about this a long time ago. And as far as the extreme sort of rush on the vaccines, I remember reading Wellcome Trust talking about how they wanted to have vaccines go from concept to final project in less than 100 days. That they would send the genetic code, you know, it would just be emailed, you know, like it would just be in the form of like a computer program. And then that would go into these vaccines. I mean, what have you found of, you mentioned ARPA-H, the health DARPA, which if you think robot dogs and DARPA are bad, wait until you see what they've got designed for us through the health. What have you uncovered from what those lunatics are working on over at ARPA-H these days with regard to vaccines and I guess depopulation as well?
Yeah, absolutely. There's this thing called Poseidon that I had talked about recently. I'm trying to see if I can pull this up here because I don't want to misquote it. Let's see here. Here it is. So there's this program called Poseidon, and it says Poseidon intends to develop non-invasive synthetic sensors and reporters to reliably detect cancer from our breath or urine samples at home. The self-administered kit based on a human-centered design would allow any adult to screen for cancers before symptoms arise. The kit would also integrate results securely with electronic health records and ensure individuals connect with a healthcare professional via telemedicine to review their results.
like a PCR test for AIDS. Yeah, you go get it at Walgreens somewhere. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, and it alludes to when Larry Ellison was talking about how we're going to be able to like test for cancers based on people's DNA, and we're going to be able to provide you with a vaccine, you know, specifically catered to each individual and stuff. And I think that with things like 23andMe and Ancestry.com and all these things rolling up to like BlackRock and 23andMe was Ann Wojcicki, who was married to Sergey Brin, you know, and the Wojcickis, and I believe their father or grandfather or something was involved in DARPA. So it's sort of this like, we're going to capture everyone's DNA, and now we have access to all of it, and we're going to either start, you know, having, I think that we're going to eventually see like a giant cancer boom in the world.
Yeah.
And rising cancer rates, so that they're able to proposition this cancer vaccine to, again, further push their eugenics agenda.
Yeah. Oh, man. I didn't realize that Wojcicki's dad was in DARPA. I shouldn't be surprised, of course, but and of course the sister being the head of YouTube, she was very critical of people talking about the COVID vaccines and how they cause a lot of problems, and then she up and drops dead from cancer of all things. Well, you know.
Go ahead.
The algorithm giveth and the algorithm taketh away, lady. I mean,
yeah.
I hate to celebrate anybody's death, but I mean, she made it impossible for people to find out information about what was really going on. She suppressed actual alternative, just natural medicines. Might as well have been, you know, it was the same as going out there and giving the Nazi salute, you know what I mean, on camera. Yeah. It was essentially the same thing. They would get you not just deplatformed. I mean, you would just disappear completely off of anything Google related. So I have no sympathy for them, but boy, was Peter Thiel involved in any? I mean, I know he came out of Stanford, and these guys also came out of Stanford. And you know, he's obviously PayPal Mafia, and my assumption is that all these people know each other, and that if they're at least, you know, one deviation away from they're connected either through a venture capital firm that also, you know, supports them. But what is Peter Thiel's relationship with Google? Do we know much about that? Is he in with those guys or what?
I think that they've all sort of spawned from the same place. I know Sergey Brin went to Stanford. He's, you know, backed by things like Vanguard, BlackRock, Peter Thiel funded, you know, Mark Zuckerberg through Founders Fund. Interestingly enough, I'm under the assumption that basically everyone that comes from Stanford now is just beholden to Peter Thiel in some way, or at least knows him.
Yeah.
But the head of that 23andMe company is Ann Wojcicki, but it's also Linda Avey was another person, and she is actually a Stanford board of fellows. So she came from Stanford, and she's on the Human Immunome Project with people like Jane Metcalf and Elias Zerhoni. Elias Zerhoni was under George W. Bush. So it's like it's a constant network of people that all know each other, and they're all just sort of pushing the same agenda. The Human Immunome Project is kind of concerning. Let me see if I can pull up their website and show you their mission statement.
Oh, please do. Also, we had Theranos coming out of there, right?
Yeah.
Of Stanford everything associated with that. Boy, when I took a look at the investor pool for that company, I was like, I mean, was Satan unavailable for that funding round? Because all the devils were there, and Elizabeth Holmes was most definitely up to no good with that the blood testing company again, of course.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm surprised that she ended up getting in trouble, because it seems like the people that get in bed with all these people are
me too. It makes me think that something happened along the way, because normally you can be running that scam and they'll let it go on and on and on, even if you're taking money from Henry Kissinger and guys like that. I mean, especially if you're taking money from Henry Kissinger, they want to make sure that goes on. I was a bit surprised that she found herself in a prison cell, because most of these people get elevated. You know, they wind up, you know, at the Aspen Institute or someplace like that, not at a Supermax somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. So this Human Immunum Project, it says it was designed to meet this moment, to combine systems biology with the power of artificial intelligence to decode and model the immune system to improve health for all. And it was founded in 2016 as the Human Vaccines Project. So they've since changed their name, I guess, since COVID.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be optimistic about all this and say, well, it's not over yet. There's still, you know, we still have a say in this. It requires human beings to participate in all of this. But if we've got the vast majority of people sleepwalking through, and then you can manipulate them by telling them, well, you have to have a certain biometric ID, a real ID card, and that's the only way you can participate in getting on an airplane, or you've got to have a COVID vaccine or a COVID mRNA gene therapy disguised as a vaccine in order to participate in the workforce or any of this stuff. I mean, it feels like at some point they're just closing off the escape routes for everybody, one door at a time, and getting us into a situation where we're going to be forced. I mean, I think a lot of people were forced during COVID to make some calculations based on, you know, I don't want to take this shot. But I have to go to work. I have to provide for myself and for my family, and that's the priority. And if this vaccine is terrible for me, well, I guess I'll find out in 10 years. Or maybe I'll find out in 10 minutes, as some people did. But that's a calculation that people are being forced to make. I mean, I wonder what other calculations it's going, you know, are you unwilling to get on the internet anymore because you have to have your, let's say your real ID card is required as an internet ID card, you know, and then people like us who make a living being online and doing things like this. I mean, all of a sudden we'll have to make some sort of calculation, like how do I get a black market real ID card? Yeah. You know, what swap meet is selling them, and how am I going to figure this out? But I mean, seriously, we're going to have to make some very hard calculations and decisions that I'm not looking forward to in this impending technocracy. But I think that maybe the first step towards creating some barriers to this is to educate ourselves and educate the people that are listening to us about what it is we're up against. I mean, what you do this, you know, this is a real emphasis for you. I mean, what component of this technological, this impending technocracy has you the most concerned? Because you can always choose to not take a vaccine. I mean, at least for now, you can choose to not take a vaccine. And maybe you can choose to deal in cash, though you're going to have some problems if you want to buy anything of size, and you're going to have to deal with banks and things like that. But what part of this is unavoidable, and what part do you think is keeps you up at night the most?
I would say probably the AI is the biggest part for me, because it seems like it's able to sort of accelerate any sector that you end up injecting it into. So whether that is, you know, creating databases and creating profiles on people, or, you know, using it. I mean, they're investing in the nuclear facilities to be able to power these AI data centers. And there's, you know, data centers popping up all over the world. And I think it's going to slowly automate people into being, Bill Gates even said that we're getting to the point where we don't need people anymore. And I think that that's going to be like the forefront of what ends up making us essentially redundant in this system, where they don't need people to, even to code and engineer things. I mean, they're on the precipice of agentic AI, which is self-correcting, self-learning, and things like that. So these engineers and these coders are literally coding themselves out of a job. And it's eventually going to get to the point where, I mean, we've already seen it's slowly replacing artists and researchers. Elon just posted about it. His being able to pass the bar exam and you know, things like that. There's legislation in Congress right now saying that they're going to allow artificial intelligence to be recognized as medical practitioners. Yeah.
God, so, what could possibly go wrong?
Right, right. And so I just sort of see it as it can be applied to all of these technologies where, you know, maybe separately they're not as, you know, draconian or totalitarian or as efficient, where AI sort of checks that box and allows them to hyper accelerate the agenda. And I think that's sort of why we're seeing this redlining happening, is all of these, you know, learning language models and things. And I try to tell people every day, like, please don't use Grok, please don't use ChatGPT, even if it's for something stupid and funny. And, you know, I see people that I think are arguably using it and not saying that they're using it, getting all these things done. And I'm sitting here like lagging behind, trying to like manually do things. I'm working on a book, you know, that I'm like, I'll do a paragraph a night or a couple sentences a night, and people are churning out books like it's nothing. And I think they're just feeding the beast. And it's one of those things where, you know, you don't have to like satellites and you don't have to buy into them. They're probably not going to affect your day-to-day life, you know, every single day outside of the mass surveillance and worldwide connection. But AI is the thing that people are inviting in, and they're giving up their consent to allow this thing to come in and basically take over.
Yeah. I haven't gone down that path with using AI or having it and incorporating it into my life, in part because I'm technologically retarded myself, so I don't even know how to use it. So it's a benefit. My ignorance is working in my favor in this one, because I wouldn't even know how to program it. But I do know people that use it for some tasks that are, you know, like my friend Midnight Mike, who I do a show with, will say, you know, he's in cybersecurity, and he'll say from time to time, he'll ask it to write him a piece of code that would solve a certain problem, and he'll look at it, and it'll do it for him, and he'll take a look at it. Maybe he'll use it, or maybe he'll use part of it. It'll get him started, and then he can sort of build off of that. And I get it. I understand why that could be very convenient. I don't know how I could use it, because like you said earlier, if someone's using it for research, you know, garbage in, garbage out. You know what I mean? If I'm using it for research, I don't know that I could. I couldn't validate it or verify that it was correct, and I don't know the source of it. I don't know where it's coming from. I would treat it like the way I treat Wikipedia. I will use Wikipedia from time to time for research purposes, for very banal things, right? I need dates in which something happened, or a person, like who this person was married to, or when they were, you know, like what their job title was, how long were they in office from this period, things that are easily fact-checked, but certainly nothing that's like opinion. You know, yeah. I would never use Wikipedia. I just do not trust that at all. But but I think a lot of people get lulled into this false sense of security online with things such as Wikipedia, but also the next iteration of that is obviously artificial intelligence, and they make it so easy that you can use it. And hey, look, I mean, we can just create these funny pictures, and we can make we can make videos with it real quick, or we can, you know, and I get it. I get that it's, you know, it's certainly helpful for some people, but man, it's gonna not just put people out of business, it's gonna put entire industries out of business. You mentioned like the horse and buggy, you know, like, oh, you wouldn't be worried about the horse and buggy. Well, yeah, I am. Like, whatever the equivalent is of today's horse and buggy, I'm most definitely worried about that, because if AI comes and replaces it, then we get dependent on that. And I don't know that it's necessarily building, it's not like it's a car that is replacing the horse and buggy. This is something else. I mean, I worry about it as a crutch. Right now, it's like this nice tool, but then at some point, everybody gets dependent on it, and then what? what do they do, right? They either pull it out from under us, or they change the code, they change the content, and next thing you know, you're everything that you're seeing is skewed in a much different way, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw, you know, when people stopped going to the libraries and reading books because Google came out, you know, and now everyone's just like, well, instead of researching anything, I'm just going to Google it. And right. I see that same sort of thing coming with AI, where it's like, well, I don't need to solve this problem anymore. I'll just let AI do it. Or, you know, I don't need to, you know, draw a picture or become a good artist or become a good researcher or become a good anything. I'll just let AI do it. And I think that's going to inevitably make us, like Bill Gates said, useless. I mean, there's not going to be anything we'll know how to do except for rely on AI. Yeah.
I could talk to you all day. Let's wrap up with this one last topic. Technocrats wanting to go to space. Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, creating these rockets, creating these whatever this PR is. It's Musk saves the day, goes up to this International Space Station and rescues the stranded astronauts that were up there. Astronauts not being the key word there. Jeff Bezos filling his penis-shaped spaceship with a bunch of women, and then questions about the you know, validity of that entire trip to whatever, air quotes, space. I don't get a good feeling when these guys are privatizing the space travel industry or the space industry, putting satellites up everywhere, blocking out, you know, creating a space fence around us. I don't know who I would want doing that, but it certainly wouldn't be Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. I know that they get high regards for being efficient and getting things done and building companies that turn into juggernauts that make a lot of money. And listen, you order something on Amazon and it shows up at your house. You know what I mean? Like, yep. They do a good job at what they do. But I know about his background. I know about Elon Musk's background. I don't trust these people at all. And they both want to get into the rocket business. So
yeah.
What do you make of that?
I'm kind of conflicted because I'm a big, I don't trust NASA and I don't trust the whole NASA. Like, I don't think we went to the moon. And I do think that our presence in space as far as people goes is largely, I don't know how you would say this, but I think they overplay it a lot in that, you know, I don't think that a lot of the things that are going on right now outside of us having satellites and, you know, these large rockets that I think were used to sort of study and prepare the technology for the military industrial complex to have like ICBMs and things like Palmer Luckey's technology that you were referencing earlier. And I think that a lot of it's show to buy goodwill from the public. You know, all of our Apollo missions were done while Nixon was doing Vietnam. And every time something bad happened in Vietnam, 6 months later, we were having a new Apollo mission and, you know, getting America bought back into patriotism. And I think that as far as like the human missions going into space and stuff, I think that they are using a lot of that for PR and to get money and court investors and get the government bought in. Like I think that we're probably going to inevitably send things to Mars, but you have things like the Van Allen radiation belt and stuff that's kind of keeping humans from going. Otherwise, they'd be microwaved. And that they've talked about different ways that they'd be able to sort of protect people, but I still think we're far off from anything like that. And I think that Jeff Bezos's Blue Origin is sort of a, hey, look, I'm also doing things besides just like sending you know, stuff to your doorstep. So can I have money? Can I have investors?
Right.
I look cool. I'm just like Elon, right? And Elon's using it. I think they're all just building the space cloud, and I think they're launching, you know, thousands and thousands of satellites to interconnect them together, beam them back down to cell towers, and sort of have this data center in space. Because, you know, let's say humans got really itchy and decided, well, you know, down with the technocrats, we're going to go destroy all the data centers. Well, the regular person can't take a rocket up there and get up there. It's hard to say. I know that as far as the data centers and AI and stuff is concerned, a big part of that is the cooling factor and having to use tons and tons of water. So if they're doing anything, I think they're eventually going to set up data centers or something similar on Mars or on some extraterrestrial body so that it's even further away. And that way they're, you know, like you said, the fail-safe system that they'll have where there's no way out. And I think a lot of it is sort of a front for that. And a lot of those funds are maybe being reallocated to different things, and that it isn't quite as expensive as they claim that it is. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but I would love to see some evidence of, you know, besides for the couple of video clips that we have of them opening the hatch door prematurely before... Right. Jeff Bezos comes and unlocks it. There's no scorch marks on the pod either. They decide to send up a bunch of like rich women worth a lot of money. So it's
ambulances on scene. Katy Perry's record label? Did they sign off on this? Where's her insurance policy for it? You know what I mean? Before they send their biggest pop star out to space, like you're not going to have a fleet of ambulances there in case something goes wrong. I mean, get the fuck out of here with this bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if anything, if it wasn't Hollywood movie magic, they were doing like parabolic flights in an airplane or something to get that weightlessness.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's insane.
Amazon Web Servers on the Moon. That's what we're going to title this episode.
Love it.
No, listen, we're talking about this, and I know it sounds very scary to you listening to it, and that is not my intention. I know it's not your intention either. This is about awareness first. If it's scary, okay, allow it to be a little bit scared, but compartmentalize that. This is not to scare the shit out of you and make you throw your hands up and say, we're doomed. This is just, we need to talk about what we're up against, because if we're not honest about it, we're doing ourselves a disservice if we pretend like, oh, everything's just going to be fine. Trust the plan, or trust these technocrats, or Elon makes great cars. How bad can he be? Talks about wanting to have more kids and wanting to raise the population. He can't be a bloodthirsty eugenicist with those views. Don't trust any of these people. Let's talk it out. Let's explain who these people are and what they're doing and what they want and what companies are associated with them. And then you'll all be a little bit more educated and understand the plan that's actually being rolled out onto us, because it's very dangerous. They see the world differently than us, but it doesn't mean that we pack it up and give up and say, well, you know, you guys just do whatever you want with us. We'll live here on the animal farm. No, we're way more difficult than that. So
yeah.
I just want to make sure that people know that this wasn't an episode to scare the shit out of you. If it's scary, then, you know, look, there's some things that are coming that aren't great, but it's not over yet. And we still have a say in this. And I think it's important for us to have this conversation. Where's the best place for people to find you, to check out all your work, and to support what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm most active on X, Twitter. I do a live stream Wednesdays and Thursdays, 4 p.m. Central Time, where I'm doing those like live webs and stuff like that. I'm on Rumble, YouTube for right now. Who knows how long that'll last. Yeah. And to your point too, if you don't mind, that the education and the awareness piece is so powerful to it, you know, because acknowledging the steps is the first part of solving any problem. But at the end of the day, even government is a market where if nobody goes and gets the real ID, the system's gonna fall apart. If everyone refuses the brain chip, refuses the vaccines and stuff, it all falls apart. That they need us and our participation, and I think that's powerful and finding your own sort of way out of the matrix and networking locally and, you know, stop buying from big food and stop investing money in these companies and stuff. And over time, you know, where you can maybe wake up one person every single day, it seems like a drop in the bucket, but it eventually adds up to an ocean. So I think that there is a way on the other side of this, and it's just going to take all of us.
I agree. It's I'd rather have too much information than not enough, and I want to know who we're up against. I want to know who these people are. I want to see their names. I want to see the companies associated with them so that I can keep an eye on them. Not that I'm going to necessarily be the one that brings it all down, but I need to know who these people are and what their connections are so that it makes a little bit more sense to me, because I think we don't, it's not beneficial to us if we put our heads in sand and just say, oh, everything's fine, let's just let somebody else take care of it, or I'm sure it'll all work itself out, because it always does. Well, I hope so, but I'm certainly not going to be allowing these people to be responsible for my happiness.
Yeah.
F7Cs, everybody. Go check him out. Go support his work. Go catch his live streams as well. And if you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the website. The best place to do that. If you want to follow me on X at macroaggressions. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you again soon.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.